Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is CJ Savage. My name is Cheryl J. Savage, and I am a certified hypnotherapist. I am here today to welcome you to join us today about the power of the superconscious mind. I have been a certified hypnotherapist for more than 17 years, and I'd like to give you a little bit of background on myself. I have been a certified hypnotherapist, and I've worked with people from all walks of life, hypnotizing people for so many different things. I specialized at one time for years in past life regression. I work with groups of all sizes for stop smoking, weight loss, stress reduction, and various other things. What I'm going to do is give you a little bit of background. And basically, this is our first show on the power of the subconscious mind. And I'd like to give you a little bit of introduction on the power of the mind and what it is that we're going to talk about. A lot of people don't know really how the mind really works, and there's a lot of experiments going on with the mind. But I do the hypnosis, and when we do hypnosis, we are working with that subconscious mind, which is now more commonly known as the superconsciousness. There's many terms that relates to it, like subconscious, higher self, higher consciousness. But the term superconscious mind has now become most popular. I'd like to talk to you about some of the experiments that has been done, some of the experiments I've personally done and personally witnessed myself with the power of the mind, which is absolutely phenomenal. But still today, people still ask, you know, does it really work? And the common comments I still get with nearly every session I've ever done is somebody will almost always ask, will we bark like a dog or cluck like a chicken? And I usually ask, do you want to bark like a dog or cluck like a chicken? So the hypnosis itself, while we're working with the mind in hypnosis, hypnosis was once perceived as something more like the late night horror shows, Svengali and mind control. When years and years ago, people thought of hypnosis as someone that looks like the deer staring into the headlights, you know, where they were just going to do whatever they were told to do. But that's not the way it is at all. And hypnosis has made big strides in time. Hypnosis has come a long way. And now it's highly respected and widely accepted by nearly everyone in the world except some Christian scientists. And then there are those and the individuals in the churches that still related to those old late-night black-and-white horror movies, mind control and that kind of thing, and they just simply don't know or understand what it is, how it works, or what it's about. So we're going to talk about that. I graduated from McMurray College, and then I went on to Sangamon State, working towards my master's in clinical psychology. When I decided to take some time off from work, I was working as a mental health specialist for the Department of Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities for the state of Illinois at the Jacksonville Developmental Center. I decided to take some time off and become a certified hypnotherapist. So I did that, and then I took some more time off to go on to New York to get into advanced hypnotherapy. I was actually certified by the state of Florida through the International Association of Counselors and Therapists. I am living in, I'm from the state of Illinois, and the state of Illinois does not have certification. Some states do and some states do not yet. So I was actually certified by the state of Florida. Just to give you a little bit of background and what I did, once I got into hypnotherapy, I was doing the hypnosis. Actually, I'll tell you what happened. I was working my day shift at the Department of Mental Health. Then I'd get off work and I would go to my office and I was spreading the word that I was doing hypnosis. And I ran a little ad in the newspaper, just one little tiny ad, you know, that be hypnotized, lose weight, stop smoking, reduce stress, pass life regression, stop biting your fingernails, and I just went on and on. And when I got off work after that ad ran the first day, my answer machine was full. And so I started hypnotizing one person at a time from the time I got off work at 4:30 until midnight or 2 o'clock in the morning. This went on day after day and until one day this man said to me, you hypnotized me to stop smoking and it worked so well. I was so amazed because I'd smoked like for more than 40 years. I love to smoke and I knew I needed to quit, but it worked so well for me, I'd like to bring my family in. And I panicked thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to do a group. So he brings whole family in, fills up the office, and I hypnotize their entire family. And then I realized, you know, if I can hypnotize one person or 12 people, then I can hypnotize 50 or 100. So what I did, I had this idea that I wanted to keep my hypnosis away from my work as a mental health specialist. So I traveled, and I started becoming an advocate in hospitals. And I was doing hypnosis in hospitals to help people to lose weight, stop smoking. I charged, of course, and the hospitals didn't seem to mind back in the early 90s. I became a certified hypnotherapist in 91. And through the 90s, I was going from one hospital to another to work with groups of people. And the hospitals were eventually getting their own regular staff people to come in to do their own hypnosis. And I was asked by many hospitals to stay on full-time in the hospital, but it would have meant I would have had to move and I had two small children, and they didn't seem to want to pay me what I really wanted or what I needed to be paid. And then in March of 93, I quit my job as a mental health specialist, and I just, that's all I did. I just traveled and I did the hypnosis full-time. Let me tell you some of the phenomenal things that can be done with the mind, because the most common question that I still get from any group is, does this really work? Well, yes, it really does, and it works like magic. And if I didn't think so, know so, or believe it, then I would not have walked across a very long, large bed of red-hot coals. And those coals were so red and so hot, you could fry a hamburger on them. But I was hypnotized. I hypnotized myself, actually, and that was part of the advanced hypnotherapy. I hypnotized myself, and I walked across that bed of coals, and I did not even have a red mark, not a burn, not anything on my feet. Also, I've walked across a bed of broken glass and run things like, okay, I was younger and a little wilder, but run things like large, like needles through my hand, and then we would heal it up and do things like that. Well, when you experiment these kind of things and you witness these kind of things with the power of the mind, you come to realize that really anything is possible as long as the mind can conceive it and believe it, then it will achieve it. And just to give you an example, there was a story, a real-life story, really happened. It was a real story by a real person here a few years ago where a 65-year-old woman had her grandchildren at her house, and the children were outside playing, and the driveway going up to the house was on an incline. It was like a small hill going up to the house. And the children were out there playing, and one of the kids got in her car and pulled it over in reverse or neutral, and it was rolling down the driveway, which the car ran over one of the other grandkids. And one of the kids was pulling on her grandkid, and it parked right on top of the kid. And I guess by the time the car wheel was on top of the her grandson's leg, one of the other kid that was in the car that was driving it put it back into park, and so it parked right on the kid. He couldn't get out. While one of the other kids was pulling on him and couldn't get him out from underneath the car. Well, the 65-year-old grandmother opens the door and sees this kid under the wheel, and without hesitation, with all of her being, every cell of her being, she wanted that car off of her grandchild. So she just goes out, runs out to the car, and lifts the car up. 65-year-old woman. Now, any other time, if she would have said, I really want to pick up this car, I just really want to pick up this car, well, it would have been impossible, and of course, you know, she couldn't have done it. But determination, having the will to do it, and being really, truly determined, wanting it so badly, there was not any kind of doubt that she couldn't want to do this. It was something that she just had to do. She was so determined that she'd slipped the car like it didn't weigh anything. Well, there was many people that tried to interview her, and she wouldn't take the interviews. And finally, one guy kept calling her and kept calling her and asking her why she wouldn't be interviewed. And she said, you know, the reason is because I realized I've done something I didn't know was possible that I could do. And because I did lift that car, I'm a 65-year-old woman. I keep thinking to myself, if I can do that, what are all the things I could have done that I missed out on in my entire life? So she realized when the mind sets to be determined to accomplish something and puts aside all doubt, all fears, and they just have to achieve it. They perceive it. They believe it. They want it. The determination is there. Then you can achieve it. So the mind is extremely powerful, and what the mind is what everyone needs to really understand is that we have two very distinct modes of a mind. We have what we call the physical consciousness, which is what we use on a daily basis to think, decide, we get up and decide where we're going to go, what we're going to wear, what we're going to do, and so on. But that subconscious mind, as people know it, it's an old-fashioned term. Subconscious was referred to something down under that physical mind. When they've come to realize it's a superconscious mind, and the superconscious mind is what you still, some people think of as the subconscious mind, but it is the superconscious. It is where all the power lies. And that mind is the spiritual part of you, which is in every cell of your being. It's not up here in the head. It's not in the brain. It is the spiritual part of you, and it is pure energy, pure energy. It is in every cell of your being. It's not just the head or the brain. It's in every cell of your entire body, of your being. It is pure energy. It's the spiritual part of you, and it never shuts down any more than the heart does. That superconscious mind is the spiritual part of you, and it never shuts down. It never stops working any more than the heart does. As long as you are alive and you're breathing, that superconscious mind is working. So that brings to the point that if a person is in a comatose state, if they're comatose, that means they're, quote, unconscious, as they used to call them. If the person, say, had a head injury, then they were determined to be what they called unconscious in a comatose state. However, they've come to realize the medical profession has realized that when a person is comatose, they are not unconscious. As a matter of fact, the only thing that is unconscious is that physical consciousness, that physical mind that you used to think and talk and decide, and that can't respond. But when a person is sick or hurt or injured, then that superconscious mind just keeps working. And what it does, it responds to its environment. It responds to every single word that it hears. And I know that for a fact because that is exactly what happened to me when I was a kid. And that goes back to how I got into hypnosis. And let's just stop here and let's go back. When I was a small child, my uncle's boss was a hypnotherapist, and he would always be hypnotizing somebody, and he's always telling my uncle about it, which is my dad's younger brother. And so he lived 2 hours in a city, 2 hours away. So whenever he came to visit, we just loved to hear his stories. Well, I seemed to hang on to those stories more than anyone else in the family. My dad and I always listened to all of the stories. They were fascinating. One story he told when I was a little girl was about a boy that was my age who had been in a bad accident, and he was unable to walk. He became paralyzed from the waist down. The doctors told the boy that and his family that he would never walk again. His spinal cord had been severed. Now, all medical evidence showed that the boy would not walk. He was paralyzed. However, my uncle's boss hypnotized him, and when he hypnotized him, he was able to walk. And I remember my uncle saying, it's the darndest thing. When he's hypnotized, he can walk. But then when he's not hypnotized, he can't walk anymore. So the parents go back to the doctor, and they keep telling him, yes, but he can walk when he's hypnotized. He can walk. We've seen him walk. You know, we know he'll walk again. But the doctor just said, no, it's not possible. So the hypnosis, they just kept doing this, and this just went on constantly. And the boy truly did believe that he would walk again. They did not believe the doctor. They would not believe him. And with practice and over time, the boy did regain his walking skills back through the power of hypnosis, through the power of his own mind. It was not the hypnotist or the hypnotherapist, I guess you would call him. It was not him that made him walk. It was the boy's mind itself, that mind in the boy that believed, he conceived it, and he believed it, and he was able to achieve it. So I always found that very, very fascinating. I was a small child, but when I was 12 years old, my sister was in a bad car accident, a very bad accident, and she became comatose. She was, quote, unconscious. Well, back then, that was many years ago, and back then the hospital's idea of intensive care was being in a regular room with family members that stayed in the room around the clock. Well, my sister, being in the bad state that she was in a car with four other kids, and these kids, there was five of them all together, they were getting ready to pull out on the highway from the Dairy Queen in a small town called Winchester, and this was back in 1967, I believe, and my sister was getting ready to pull out. She was driving, and there was a guy, a local guy, that was getting his car souped up for the drag races that night. He was trying to get his car up to 200 miles an hour. So he comes around the corner down the highway going about 180 miles an hour when the hood flew up because his engine was on fire and he could not see. So he smashed into the side of the car that my sister was driving. The car spun around and hit him again, spun around and hit him again, spun around and hit him again. They were hit four times. Well, all the kids were in very bad shape. They were in serious critical condition. My sister was the worst of them all. Her head was split in three parts, and they landed in the hospital, and they pushed my sister to the side and said they had to work on and save the ones that they knew that they thought they could save. So they did nothing with my sister. Well, my dad stood next to my sister and said, Karen, you're getting better. You're going to be just fine. You're going to be just fine. You're going to come right through this just fine. He kept talking to her, where she slipped into a coma, and from that day on, around the clock practically, my dad told her that she would be just fine, and she was getting better and better and better. They gave her last rites several times, didn't think that she'd make it to the night, and my dad just kept talking to her and telling her she was getting better and better. And then they said to my parents one day, well, if she does live, it's most likely she'll be a vegetable. She won't remember anything. She won't remember her family, her past, her friends, school, or anything. And they said she had had extensive brain damage. So my dad goes in there and he tells her, you will remember everything. You will remember. You remember your family. You remember your friends, your school. You won't forget any of it. You're going to open your eyes. You open your eyes. He must have told her 100 times at least, open your eyes. And he said, you're going to open your eyes. He said, you're going to open your eyes, you're going to remember us, and you're going to be just fine. You're getting better and better every day. He said, every minute of every day, you're healing up miraculously fast. Your body's healing. He said, you're going to open your eyes, and when you do, you're going to feel like a horse kicked you in the head. Well, eventually she did open her eyes, and she became the miracle child in the hospital, and against all medical evidence, she healed up fairly quickly, and when she opened her eyes, she did remember us. And when they asked her if she knew what happened to her, she responded very slowly and took a long time for her to come up with an answer. But she opened her eyes and she kept nodding her head, "Do you know what happened?" And she nodded her head, "Yes." And they said, "Well, what happened?" She eventually answered, "A horse kicked me in the head," which they thought that was a really funny coincidence, since my dad had told her several times that while she was, quote, unconscious, that she'll feel like a horse kicked her in the head. Well, she healed miraculously well because she lived a very normal life, finished school, got married, had two kids, and she has worked as a CNN ever since. Now, she's a little forgetful, and she's a little dingy, we think, sometimes, but she's, if you didn't know that and you're around her, you would never know that she'd ever had brain damage ever. She's dingy if you're around her long enough, and we kind of spacey sometimes, but she lived a perfectly normal life. As a matter of fact, in my view, looking back on all the kids that were in that accident that day, and with my dad knowing and knowing what it was that would help her more than anything, I think he knew that from listening to his own brother, but the power of the mind. But looking back, I realized that my sister was the worst off of any of the five, but she healed better than most of them. She came through and lived a normal life and did miraculously heal. So there's an example of the power of the mind. So we're talking about when you're in a comatose state, that mind, that superconscious mind, never shuts down, and it will respond to everything that it hears around it. So when a person is comatose or unconscious state, be very careful what you say. Don't say anything negative, because that mind can heal. The superconscious mind has the state-of-the-art pharmacy in it, and it can heal that body of anything. And if a person chooses to go to a doctor and listen to a conventional doctor that says, take this medication, it will help, or the doctor tells them, you're not going to make it, you're going to die, prepare for your death. You know, when a person starts believing that, life's full of choices, and a person believes that, then most likely they're going to die. They plan it, they believe it, they think it, they plan it, they dwell on it, they think it through, they project it, image it, the whole bit. They feel it with emotion. And so what happens? They're going to die. And I just detest doctors that tell people that they're going to die. I mean, are they God? Do they know something? Do they know more than God knows? Probably not. But I don't think that's a doctor's call. A doctor is a man, it's a human being, and he should not be putting a time limit on people's lives. You know, to give them hope is the best thing that they can do. And if a person chooses to use their mind to heal their bodies, then most likely they can. With just some practice, they can. One of my mentors when I was being certified was Stephen Lavelle, a phenomenal man, very articulate in his speaking. He was a university professor, and he went on to teaching, educating, and training people in the power of the mind. Stephen Lavelle, I've seen him walk across hot coals and eat fire, which I've done too. I mean, he's done all these phenomenal things and trained me to do the same thing. After I got to know him, a couple of years after I got to know him, he was traveling around the United States, extremely busy man, doing a lot of traveling, booked, his schedule was full all the time, and he noticed that he had some, like, sores, a problem that came up in skin that was growing very quickly, it's growing fast. And by the time he did get home and got it looked at, he was diagnosed with melanoma cancer. Now, the doctor told Stephen Lavelle that he would die, and he told him to prepare for his death. There was no cure. There was nothing he could do for him, that it was growing very rapidly, and by the time he'd gotten in there, it had progressed into the advanced stages. So he told Stephen Lavelle to prepare for his death. Now, Stephen Lavelle, being the one of the masterminds that he is, decided that he didn't want to die. He wasn't ready to die, even though the doctor told him that he would. He decided that he would do his own self-hypnosis on a daily basis. Every morning and every night, he would sit in a chair. And I believe the story goes like this. I haven't heard it for a long time from him, but he was in a chair with no clothes because he sat there nude because he came into this world nude before God. And so this was a very private session between just him and God. And he sat there in the nude because he had melanoma. It was on the skin. Then he would drink a glass of orange juice, and the orange juice had pulp in it, and the pulp he used as a metaphor as Pac-Man. Pac-Man was very popular then, the little Pac-Man that would go through the arcade machines. And so he would imagine that this was Pac-Man, and all the little Pac-Man were going to go through his body and eat up the cancer cells, while the juice was the healing agent and made all the good cells thrive. Now, when he first did this, he said it was just a pretend thing. It was a mind game, and it was just a pretend thing. And he still had all the fears and the worries in himself that, you know, the doctor keeps saying I'm going to die. I might. But he continued practicing this metaphor of just self-hypnosis, imagining the Pac-Man coming in and eating up the cancer cells as this juice was going through and healing his body and making his body just thrive. Well, after a couple weeks of doing this, he started getting into where when he closed his eyes and he would meditate on it, imagine Pac-Man, he started visualizing and seeing little Pac-Man literally eating up these little cells that didn't look very good, that looked sick. And he said, and he started feeling it with emotion. He'd practiced it to the point where he was actually feeling the little Pac-Man eating up the cancer cells. And when he would get done with this session, which he would spend at least a half an hour to an hour doing this morning and night, he said he actually started feeling better. Well, within a few months, and actually at the beginning when he went to the doctor, he only had a few months to live, which the doctor was thinking like 6 months. But within a few months, he was actually getting better, and the melanoma was actually starting to heal. He went back to the doctor, and he said, I am getting better. The doctor said, there isn't any cure of melanoma cancer. You would not be getting better. But Stephen was explaining what he was doing, and he said, all I'm doing is I'm doing my self-hypnosis. I'm using my mind to heal myself. He said, other than that, I'm saying my prayers, and I try to eat healthy. He said, I'm eating good, nutritious foods. The doctor said, well, that's great. He said, I'm glad you have hope, but there isn't any real hope for melanoma. Well, Stephen returned to his doctor again, and the doctor could clearly see he was truly and clearly getting better, and the melanoma was disappearing. Long story short, he completely, entirely healed himself, and Stephen Mavelle, that was many years ago. As a matter of fact, that was about 15 years ago, and Stephen Mavelle is still alive and well, and he does not have melanoma cancer, and he was able to heal himself. So there is just one example of a person healing themselves with the mind. And as he says, you have state-of-the-art pharmacy right there in that mind to heal whatever it is that's wrong with you. So can the mind do phenomenal things? Well, here's one of the things that I think is pretty phenomenal. If you've ever heard of Marshall Silver, Marshall Silvers is a well-known hypnotist in Las Vegas. And he's done his show there. I don't know if he's still today doing his show this year, but he has for many years. And he is a phenomenal hypnotist. But one of the things that he demonstrated as with the power of the mind is that when a person is hypnotized, what they're doing is they're reaching an altered state of consciousness, and you're allowing that superconscious mind to completely take over. You do not lose control of your mind, and you do not lose your hearing. You don't lose your senses. And you certainly don't lose control of yourself in any way, shape, or form. So the hypnosis, you reach that altered state of consciousness, and when you're guided by another person, Marshall Silvers asked this lady, who looks like she weighed about 110 pounds, very thin, small lady, about 5'4", very thin, was around 40 years old. He asked her to come up. He hypnotized her. Then he placed two chairs facing himself, and he hypnotized her. He told her to lay, he had her lay on the floor, and he told her that her body would be as hard as iron, that it would be hard, it would be stiff, it would not bend, it would not break, it would not bruise, that it was as hard as iron, he was going to pick her up and lay her up on these chairs, and that no matter what, nothing, no way, no man, no anything would be able to bend her or harm her in any way. So he picks her up, he lays her on these chairs so that just her heels are on the edge of one chair and just her head is on the other chair. And there is nothing in between, no support whatsoever underneath her body. Then he asked for a large man to come forward, and this man was approximately 200 pounds, 6 foot one, 200 pounds, and he asked this man to come forward. Then he asked this man to step up on her stomach and stand on her. You know, I've done hypnosis for a lot of years, and even at that point, that many years into it, I'm thinking, oh my gosh. But you know, he stood up on top of her. He helped, Marshall Silvers helped him to stand up on top of her stomach, and he stood there. She didn't flutch. She didn't open her eyes. She didn't bend. She didn't bruise or anything. And then he stepped down. Marshall Silvers told her that she would not have any pain. She would not have any harm. She would not be hurt in any way, shape, or form, that her very stiff, hard body would return to its normal state, and there would be no repercussions. Sure enough, she opened her eyes, and he asked her how she felt. She said, I feel great. Now, there was no magic there. There was no invisible props or support for her. And even if there had have been any support to hold her body up on those chairs, since just her heels and her head was on the chairs, if there had have been, I would not want a 200-pound man sitting on my stomach. If I was hypnotized, and with the suggestions that he gave her, I'm sure it would be fine. So is the mind powerful? Oh, yeah. Now, the one question, too, that people bring up constantly to me is, and just how does hypnosis relate to Christianity? Oh, that's about as close to Christianity as you can get. If you want to be spiritual, you want to get close to God, it doesn't matter, you know, whether if you want to call it God or one universal power. There is one universal power there, and I call it God. You can call it anything you want to. Some call it spirit, who are more spiritual. Some people call it God. Some people call it the universal power. But there is one universal power. And when you use that superconscious mind, that is a direct connection to that universal power. It's like if you go to the ocean and you take a cup and you dip out the water out of that ocean and you walk up the hill, do you still have ocean water? Is that part of the ocean? Yes. You might put a separation, but that's still the ocean water. It's still part of the ocean, and it still has the exact same thing in it as the water that's in the ocean. So when you use that super consciousness, you are, in fact, using that universal power. It's a part of you. Now, what a lot of people don't realize is this. If you go back to, I believe it's the Old Testament, Genesis, you will see in the very beginning of the Bible, God used hypnosis to hypnotize Adam to remove a rib. And hypnosis is actually mentioned more than 1,000 times throughout the Bible. Now, you're thinking, well, I've never read the word hypnosis. No, of course you didn't. Because the word hypnosis is a Greek word that came from, it was coined by, actually, Dr. James Braid in 1841. He thought that it was something that looked and appeared to be sleep, so he used the Greek word sleep. Sleep that it is. Hypno means sleep as a Greek word. When he realized that it was not sleep, he tried to change the word to monoideism, but it never caught on. People love the word hypnosis, and they still use it today. However, anyone who really, truly understands hypnosis, which is nothing more than reaching that altered state of consciousness and using that mind power, anyone who really understands it and knows what it is, can easily recognize it, and if a person understands it and can recognize it, knows when it is, where it is throughout the Bible. There is a very large organization of ministers who are all hypnotherapists, and these ministers have actually counted the number of times that people are hypnotized throughout the Bible. Well, when God, in the beginning, in Genesis, says he put Adam in a deep sleep, which he might appear to be sleeping, but he did not. And he removed the rib to make woman. Well, some people will say to me, and I've had people say, do you really believe that? Yes, I do. You know, do you think that I can judge and decide what part of the Bible is true, what part of it isn't? You either believe it or you don't. And the Bible is true. And that part is true. Did God hypnotize Adam? He certainly did. And that's exactly, otherwise, how would have Adam had a rib removed without not having any pain or any harm? So hypnosis actually goes back, as far back as the beginning of time, with it in the Bible. Hypnosis has quite an amazing history. It goes back to as far as 1000 B.C. with stone carvings of priests in temples hypnotizing their worshipers to be healed, and they were. So it goes way back, and there's a lot of history there about hypnosis. It goes back, but are you going to find the word hypnosis? No, because it wasn't even coined until 1841 by Dr. James Braid. But it goes back as far as time can be. By the way, Dr. James Braid, a little history on the power of the mind in history, is Dr. James Braid and another doctor, actually there were three of them, in the mid-1800s, performed over 600 surgeries in which they used hypnosis. Back then, the fatality rate for major surgeries was actually more than 50%. And when they did their surgeries, in more than 600, their fatality rate dropped down to less than 4%. And those that did die didn't die from the surgeries. They died later from complications, I think. So, yes, it works. And even the medical profession, health organizations, it commonly uses, it's widely used now by law enforcement, health organizations, hospitals, clinics, ministers, dentists, doctors, many, 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 many people. So it's widely accepted and it's used so much more now. People are becoming more aware. They're becoming more educated. They're becoming more in tune with their own self. So, yes, hypnosis is widely accepted. It is, I think, directly related to Christianity, and it is simply using the altered state of mind. I could get into the different states, the different modes of the mind, but it isn't really important because people will not remember it. But in the awake state, in the wide awake state, we call that the beta state, which you're totally wide awake, and what you're using is that physical mind, that physical consciousness. And if you could see that brainwave activity on a monitor, you would see these lines going up and down. They're close together, and the electricity that's flowing through the mind is very rapid, which does not allow any new programming to enter in. And the physical mind has what we call a critical factor, which is always arguing with you, always comes up with this negative stuff, always telling you why you can't, don't, won't, shouldn't, don't. But the subconscious mind, that superconscious mind, when you go into an altered state, and you just simply do that by just simply relaxing, taking a few deep breaths, and within a minute to 7 minutes, you'll reach an altered state of consciousness, even if you're just in a slightly relaxed state, and that's when you visualize and think and imagine. Upon awakening or when you go to bed, visualize what it is you want. When you visualize it, project it, feel it with emotion. Imagine as if it's already there. Imagine it as if you already have it or you're already doing it. Feel it with emotion and imagine it. It will come to be because what you believe, what your mind can conceive and believe, it will achieve. So whether it's a slightly relaxed state or whether it's a very relaxed state, the alpha state is relaxed, where your physical mind is still working, of course, but the theta state is very, very relaxed. And I use the theta state upon going to sleep or when I'm waking up in the morning. But if I'm hypnotizing someone, I just simply tell them, sit back and relax. Take a deep breath. And when I tell them this, they are listening to my voice, thinking about what it is I'm saying. It's like a mind exercise, and I am just simply guiding them through their meditation. To do the self-hypnosis, you simply guide yourself, taking a few deep breaths. Deep breath, relaxing. And while you're doing this, you might count to yourself very slowly while you inhale, then count to 3 or 5, holding your breath with your lungs full of oxygen, then exhaling while you count slowly to 3 or 5 as you exhale. And you might do this, plan to do this about 10 times as you're also visualizing, imagining what it is that you want to achieve or to be or to do. And you might go from the alpha state to being kind of relaxed into the theta state, T-H-E-T-A, where you drift off and you might go into your own self-hypnosis where you are hypnotized and your mind lights up like a movie screen, which is a very deep, relaxed state, which is not necessary to be hypnotized, but it can happen. It's like a dreamlike state. You might just simply slip into a natural sleep. If you are asleep, that is the delta state, and both minds, both modes of the mind, the physical mind and the superconscious mind, rest, and your energy is recharging at that point. So the delta state is you're actually asleep, but your physical mind is drifted off, your superconscious mind also drifts off, and you're asleep. And you will not, in the sleep state, you do not respond to either my suggestions or anyone else's or even your own. But you can hypnotize yourself because all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. You do all the work. You are in complete control all the time. Now, another common question is hypnosis dangerous? No, it's not. This type of hypnosis, it's not. There isn't any dangers, except I tell people do not listen. When I hypnotize someone, I give them a CD for reinforcement. And the only danger in this type of hypnosis is do not listen to your CD while driving a vehicle, because I tell you to sit back and relax, take a deep breath. Now, that does not make for good driving skills, so don't listen to it when you're driving. That's the only danger that there is, possibly. So if you can comprehend all this and understand that there is so much power there, the mind is incredibly powerful. If you can understand that and comprehend it, then you need to learn to guide and to train your mind. And when you do that, then you can be, do, have anything you really want. The biggest problem with most people is that they don't really know what it is they really want. So, in order to start figuring out what it is that you really want, I would suggest that you start by making a list of the things that you really want. And the more you write and write your goals, what it is that you want, you're going to figure out exactly what it is you really, really do want, not just your hopes and wishes. You know, you can wish your life away, and that's not really your deepest desires. Because if you just hope and wish, you're never going to happy. You're always just going to hope and wish. So try to figure out what it is that you really want, and make sure that it's not any more than 3 things. No more than 3 things that you really, truly want. These are things that you think about all the time, things that are really important, that you are so determined to have or to do or to be, whatever it is, your goals are, that you think about it all the time. You've imagined it. You've thought about it. You've felt it with emotion. If you don't know what it is that you want, for example, maybe you want a great relationship. And what is a great relationship? Do you know what that great relationship is? Well, maybe if you don't know what it is you want, maybe you should start by making a list of what you don't want. You don't want someone who is addicted to drugs, who is dependent upon their mama to get through life, and You write down all these things that you don't want, so then you can figure out what it is that you really do want. You don't want a negative person, someone who is critical of you, and so on and so on. So you can figure out what it is you want. If it's money that you need, if you're strapped financially, if you need more income, if you need just an income, then be very, very, very specific. Exactly how much it is that you want to achieve by a certain date. And you start by writing this down, because on Thursday, you join me for an hour of power in what it is that you can do to achieve that great health and wealth and happiness. I'm going to give you a list of just 7 things to start with, 7 things that you can start turning your life around completely right away. I'm going to give you a list of 7 things. Come Thursday on the Hour of Power with CJ Savage on the power of the superconscious mind. 7 things that you can do to turn your life around, to achieve that great wealth, great health, and real happiness right away. So join us then on Thursday for an Hour of Power, and I will talk to you then. And I thank you all for joining me tonight. Thank you for joining us, and have a great week.